Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your... And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. Coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington, this is the Voice of Vachon Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show, vectoring from the vortex of vociferous ventilation known formerly as the Jean Bosch Broadcast Studio in the valiant and valorious verdant village of Vachon. That was the voice, not that, but just a little while ago, was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we the Briefly strive to keep the flickering flare of Brian's flaming flambeau alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our Briefly panel includes Vachon Airport Commissioner, fellow treetop flyer, partially rehabilitated West Texan, and an unapologetic Eastern Montanan, retired Alaska Airline captain, and longest serving Briefly, Truman O'Brien. How you doing,
like
Truman?
V's and F's. Man, you really nailed it today.
I was motivated.
I'm impressed. There you go. There it is.
There's the goat.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
That's right. You saved the goat.
But wait, there's more.
Historian, professor, world traveler, boat captain, family patriarch, and now even more in demand than ever, our guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Holman.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you. Part-time political ferry service advocate, executive director of Vachon Household, Vachon Fire District Commissioner, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreher.
That's our screaming goat. just had to wait for that one.
That's right.
Yeah, that was giving a round of applause for the double alliteration.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. We should have had the applause, you know.
Darn, if I'd only known.
We got all those sites. We have all those sound effects.
Just wait for September 1st. I'm gonna get you queued up here, Truman.
That's okay. Right. Yeah. I can do it. Oh, that's right. I forgot.
And we have, hopefully, I see him on the screen, or at least I see his name, Mariner Backpacker Rower, one of the founders of Indivisible Vachon. And how many more months is this administration going to be around, inquirer, Kevin Jones? You there, Kevin?
I'm here, and I'm saying vote, 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 vote.
There you go.
No kidding. That's
not,
right.
Not vote, 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 but vote, 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 right?
Both,
vote
probably.
With V, yes.
Yeah, V.
That's right. And myself, Craig Ballas, former Gonzaga University constitutional law professor, guardian of Pan Am's first 747 at San Francisco International, and apprentice auto mechanic and repo man.
And he has some great stories about that, by the way.
Oh, boy, I know. I'm alive to tell him. That's the good thing.
That's right.
Today, our small talk guest is environmental attorney and island activist Laura Wishick, who is currently donating her time and legal skills as a volunteer attorney for immigrants. Hi, Laura. How you doing?
Hello. Good morning. Glad to be here.
We're happy to have you and very interested in hearing what you'll have to say here in just a little while. But before we focus on the current state of immigration and deportation, let's first start by checking in with the Brieflys and our guests regarding what memorable or otherwise activities they engaged in over the past week. Kevin, how about you up there somewhere in the northern latitudes?
Yeah, we had a good day, and we're less northerly now. We're in Langley at the South Whidbey Boat Harbor on Whidbey Island. And but since last week, we have visited Friday Harbor on San Juan Island, Saddlebag Island, which is just west of Guaymas, which is a very nice 1-mile hike around the island, and amazing number of herons who roost nightly on that island. We counted 20, but we think there's probably four times that many. Then from there, we went into Anacortes for a couple of days, and then we're here at Langley. Yesterday, we got out the giant Iguana 650, took to the roads again on two wheels to ride up to Saratoga, past Honeymoon Bay, and explore other parts of the island here on Whidbey. And then come back to the boat where we're surrounded by kingfishers, quails, and an amazing number of seals who stake out their own little section of the dock. And if you want to get to off the boat and off the dock, you have to walk past them, sometimes just a few feet of crabs, and they don't seem to mind at all, which first time I've ever seen
it's
that.
It's a good thing because they've got some teeth on them.
Yeah.
I was wondering how agile they are, but they seem pretty docile. But, you know, appearances can be deceiving.
Well, at least they're not bison, right?
I know they're not going to throw me too far, but exactly. Yeah, they could definitely create a nasty gash in your lower leg.
Sure.
I'm pretty cautious when I pass them.
That's a heck of a vacation you're on. We're all very envious. When are you coming back to our isle?
We will be back on Friday is our plan. I know we'll be accused of bringing in the smoke, but I think the way I'm looking at it is we're coming into the smoke. Hopefully it won't be too bad. We're going to spend a couple of days on Bainbridge. Hope to row a few days with Bainbridge Island Rowing before we make that final jump over to Vashon.
All right.
Should be there on Friday. And going to a celebration of life for an acquaintance with Indivisible Vashon, Meredith Bonaday, who passed away in a bicycling accident. So her celebration of life will be on Saturday. So definitely plan to be there and recognize her contributions to our island and humanity.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're anxious to have you back, Kevin. But thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Amy, how about you?
I even looked at my calendar, but kind of nice, actually. Well, you know, it's very quiet at Vashon Fire and Rescue right now, and very quiet at Vashon Household, so.
Is there a tongue sticking through the side of your cheek?
Side of her cheek.
Yeah. So not much going on. But we were supposed to go to Duval this weekend to see a friend and do some cool stuff. But she fell ill a little bit, so we got kind of a bonus weekend, which was nice. So we really, you know, we got caught up. We cleaned out our office and we went over town and did some errands and all that kind of good. So really nothing remarkable, but the chance to, you know, catch up with life, which is nice sometimes.
Need to do that.
Yeah, we do. We have nieces and brother-in-law and sister-in-law flying in from Denver on a plane right now. So we'll have our nieces all week. So next week I will have some stories because I get them in the mornings and Aaron gets them in the afternoon. And that's how we're juggling that. So, you know, we're just hoping with the smoke, we were all going to be outside tomorrow, you know, doing all the fun outside Vashon stuff. So we're figuring out, we're desperately hoping that Sporty's reopens because that is the number one wish of the nieces when they call.
How old are your nieces?
Approximately. Yeah, 11 and 8.
Yeah, we're talking breakfast here.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're going to be hanging out at Sporty's closing time?
What can I say? They got good taste. It was an aunt, you know, when she called up.
Are they addicted to the pancakes?
They love the pancakes. They love the burgers. They have good taste. They get a good vibe, you know. They get really great. They get Shirley Temples and all that kind of stuff, and it's their favorite place on the island.
Oh, cool! great.
Yeah. So you know, good wishes for the Sporty's water heater, so we can all have breakfast in the AC away from the smoke tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. Right. Truman, how about you?
Well, before I tell you about my week, I have to comment on Kevin's stories. You know, the plane crash that happened up at Susha. One of our pilots and his family. Her family, I guess I should say, were on their way to the San Juans when that occurred, and they got caught up in the weather and went around it and had all kinds of. But they were flying at the same time that airplane went down, so I thought that was kind of interesting. And in Langley, I went in there with my boat one time, and I wasn't paying attention. I looked up, and there was a big boat coming out, so I started backing back out, and somehow one of my lines had gotten off the back of the boat
and wrapped around one of my props. And of course, stopped the engine right away. So I had to go in the water with a knife and go under the boat and cut that darn thing loose. It was quite a story. But anyway.
Is that your current boat?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's what caused some of your problems.
That's not the problem. No. It caused a little problem I can assure you. Go ahead, Kevin.
Shallow water right off the.
It's not real deep there. I was able to throw an anchor out and get settled in pretty good.
At least you had two props.
And one other thing, Truman, we heard that the plane that went down on Susha was struck by lightning before it landed.
I'm going to doubt that, but okay.
That's one thing that we heard from apparently an eyewitness, but eyewitnesses. We can ask Craig about that.
Yeah.
The most damaging testimony and the most unreliable.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wasn't a plane just kind of big old Faraday, right? It just kind of channels and whoosh, right? Or does all the stuff go out if you get hit by lightning?
Oh, I've been hit by lightning a couple of times. Nothing happens.
Yeah. And that's on the ground.
As a pedestrian. There you go. All right, so my week, I learned something. I learned something that I already knew, and I got a new application. And that is, unless you intend to come home with one, never, ever go look at puppies.
Oh.
All
right, that's number one.
Yeah.
And the corollary of that is never go look at tractors. Because the same thing is going to happen.
Yeah.
I can assure you.
Yeah.
Tractors are going to run up to you and say, take me home.
It did.
Pickup trucks, anything. Yeah.
So my daughter and I went to look at, I was just going to look at tractors. And I went in and I talked to the salesman. I said, okay, here's what I've got. This is the tractor I've got. Convince me that I need to buy a new tractor. And he said, with that tractor, I'm not sure that I can. I mean, is that a salesman? I mean, that guy's good, right? And he said, but you know, I have a tractor that we just took in on consignment because some people bought this tractor and they got home with it and they just barely had it and then they ended up getting a divorce. And so now they want to sell the tractor. It had 29 hours on it. It is brand spanking new.
Oh, wow.
And
tractors cause divorce? Is this what I'm hearing?
That's what I'm hearing. Well, I already have one, so hopefully I can get by that. But no, my wife is for it because my tractor, especially when I had my back issues, I could barely get up and off, on and off the darn thing because it's so high.
Yeah. What is that noise in the background?
That is a car alarm.
Car alarm.
Oh, okay.
That is not us. It's somebody outside.
Gotcha.
Car alarm.
Okay.
I don't know if other folks can hear that, but
it stopped. It stopped.
There we go. But anyway, this new tractor, not only does it have a cup holder, which is, really cool, but it has a step where you can actually step up onto the darn thing. Mm-hmm. That was a big sales thing for me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I got a new tractor. Hadn't come home yet, but you want to know the best part? I got to tell you one more quick thing about this. I said, just on the off chance, I said, what would it cost? Because I have a trailer. I can, go get it and stuff. I said, just on the off chance, what would it cost to deliver this tractor to Vashon? The guy said, it was pretty expensive, with the ferry and everything. And then he kind of sat under his breath. But, of course, we would charge you the Vashon sales tax. And I didn't really register with me. But Molly goes, What? Our sales tax is 8.9%. Mm-hmm. Their sales tax is 10.3%. That savings not only paid for the delivery, but gave me a little cash back.
Wow.
All right.
Isn't that something? I was sold.
Yeah. Well, not, soon to be 9%, but still. So this is Pierce County?
Yeah.
Pierce County's at 10.3?
10.3.
Wow.
Yeah, Puyallup. Yep.
Puyallup.
Puyallup, yeah.
I missed it. What are you doing with your old tractor?
I'm trying to sell it. Anybody want a good tractor?
Okay. That was an opening for you.
Here's the sales right here for you.
See, that's one of the bennies of having our own radio show.
Exactly. Yeah. You can advertise for free. Honestly, my tractor is a great tractor. It really is. I'm not trying to sell it.
It's
I'm
got
just
great 360
it.
Views yes, from the bird's nest.
It is. No.
If you can climb up on it.
Yeah. If you can get up on the dang thing, it's wonderful. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, there you go.
That's good. Bruce, how about you?
Well, nothing quite as exciting as a new tractor or a new puppy, but
Yeah.
Actually, just a very touching thing. On Saturday, there was a memorial service for Israel Shotridge.
Oh, yeah.
And it was quite touching. There were quite a few people there. And it was just, you know, Israel was such a treasure for Vashon. And he'd been here for over 30 years and really brought an interesting sort of northern art perspective, you know, Northwest Coast art perspective to the island. So that was Saturday, and it was touching. Let's see, other things, almost to the end of crabbing season, you know, because this weekend was kind of crazy with family traveling and all gone and stuff. So we just sat on Monday morning and then pulled Monday afternoon, and we got 9 of the biggest dungeness we've gotten all summer.
Whoa.
Wow. So like, duh, what's going on? You know, you just don't know.
You're finally bringing home regulation dungeness. Is that what you're saying?
No. We're always very careful.
Okay, I know you. I know you are.
Because a couple of times, you know, these boats appear out of nowhere that are just sort of like, oh, do you have your license with you? You know, these Washington Department of Wildlife boats. They're out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we're always very careful. And we've got the grandkids, so we're trying to teach
good
them
example
to be responsible sort of sports people, that kind of thing. So, you know, and then we have some of our family in because this is sailing camp week for the grandkids. So so they came in from Eastern Washington, and, you know, a couple of them are in sailing camp this week. And then coming up on Friday evening at the museum is the opening of a new exhibit on Camp Sealth.
Mm.
So, it's an interesting sort of story. Camp Sealth was formed in 2020 on Vashon.
Say that again.
In 1920.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Very. Yeah, 19. So 2020 was the 100th anniversary of sort of founding of Camp Sealth, which was of course the COVID year. So they had planned this whole 100 year ceremony, and they were going to have an exhibit and all that kind of stuff, and that all went on hold. And so now Friday night at the Heritage Museum, there's going to be opening of an exhibit on the history of Camp South on Vashon.
Cool.
So be worth going by to see that. And if you can't get to the opening, just pop by. It'll be up for about 6 months or so. It'll be up until January, February of next year. So interesting to see. Let's see. That's about it. You know, it's sort of that and getting feeling like summer is slipping away.
Mm. You know, no. I mean, hot August nights.
Right.
There you go. Sort of like, make the most.
There's only 2 weeks of crabbing left. So,
You've heard what the Brieflys do when we talk about this, Laura. You got something you want to share with us?
Sure.
Good.
The last couple of weeks, I've had a great joy, which is that one of the people I represent who was in the detention center for a year and a half was released.
Nice.
Yay.
And this week, I took him with me to the Salmon Bake, the annual Salmon Bake at St. John Vianney Church, because a lot of people there had heard me talking about this whole arduous process and, you know, oh, we lost this and, you know, that didn't work and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they were thrilled to meet him, and he was really enjoying meeting them. And I just get a lot of joy out of seeing him out of prison.
Yes.
So that's my big thing.
That's a big thing.
That's a big thing.
A very big thing.
Yep.
My week was highlighted by one event. Well, two, actually. My wife left me.
You bought a tractor.
No, I didn't buy a tractor.
That's why she left it.
No, that's right. No, Lynette's up in the mountains. She's up in the Sawtooth right now, hopefully dodging any forest fires. Probably a lot of smoke, though. A little worried. She's with a few of our fellow Vashon friends that she took up there. They're up there for the week, so I'm batching it. But on Friday, just before she left, the Coop had its last Friday of the month theme night that Steve Amston kind of puts together in the and the Fabulous, as they call themselves, and appropriately so, Fabulous Coupe House Band. Mm-hmm. The theme was Things That You Wear. I was honored to be chosen to be one of the entertainers, and I sang Zoot Suit Riot, which is a great song, but it also makes reference to a somewhat related topic of a very powerful case of discrimination that went on in L.A. Against the Chicanos that were down there and the sailors that came in and didn't appreciate the culture and started having fights pretty regularly. But it was great fun. The songs was fun. The whole night was a great night, and I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I think everybody else. It was packed. Absolutely.
The video
packed.
Was great.
Oh, it was kind of, yeah, it was silly. Thanks. Yeah. All right, moving right along. Today is August 4th, 2026, and it is Election Day, as Kevin pointed out early on. Vote, vote, vote. And with the way some of the shenanigans, no reference to you, Amy, mm-hmm. some of the other shenanigans that our administration's engaging in, if you want to really be careful, put that ballot in the box at the library, mm-hmm. Even though you're supposed to be able to put it in the mail. But if you want to be very careful, put it in the ballot box there. There are 91 days remaining until the midterm elections coming up, and 151 days remaining in the year until New Year's Eve. Today is a special day, like all days, and it's National Chocolate Chip Day. And I brought props.
What?
I did. I brought props.
Oh, look at that. Chips Ahoy. All right.
The chewy ones.
I knew this would pay off someday.
Excellent.
It's Night Out Day, White Wine Day, and Single Working Women's Day. And somehow I think those all kind of relate.
I kind of was thinking that.
Good job, August.
That's right, and the white wine. Yeah. I didn't bring any white wine.
Or single
the
women.
Day drinking, though.
Yeah, single women. Come on, man. All right, fine.
Today in history, briefly, in 1936, Jesse Owens wins the gold medal in the long jump at the Berlin Olympics, turning a few heads by the Nazis, who considered theirs the much superior race. In 1944, the Nazi Gestapo discovered Anne Frank's hiding place in Amsterdam on this day. And in 1961, Barack Obama, the 44th president of the United States, allegedly was born in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Thank you for saying that, because I knew that was going to be a bone of contention.
Let me add to
your certificate this, to prove it.
Yeah.
That's right.
This is the day on which the Gulf of Tonkin incident took
That's
place.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
The Maddox and the Turner Joy supposedly mm-hmm. attacked by non-existent North Vietnamese torpedo boats. But it led to the Tonkin Resolution 2 days later and the beginning of the Vietnam War, which was America's longest war at 11 years until Afghanistan.
Yeah. So. Mm.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That is an important one. Thanks for bringing that up. All right.
I will say, just for Kevin, Kevin, just so you know, on the elections, Kalshi has El Sayed at 98% predicted victory over Stevens in Michigan.
Wow.
Yeah. If Stevens wins, I win $100.
Democratic Party.
It is. We'll see. Do we have a Goldwater sort of, you know, what do we got going on? What from the left, from the right? It's going to be an interesting breakdown on the elections, I think.
Yeah.
Just wanted to get that in there for you, Kevin.
All right.
I'm also interested to see in this primary what happens with Marie Glusenkamp-Perez.
Yes.
Because while she is clearly a Democrat, which many islanders prefer, she also basically caters to her community, which is quite conservative. So mm-hmm. the liberals in Southwest Washington are quite frustrated by her votes, but I'm expecting that she'll prevail in the primary and very likely also in the midterm. So cross our fingers for that.
Well, we have our share of chittimony amongst the Democrats, but that's okay. That's all right, mm-hmm. as long as everybody comes back together again. Mm-hmm. For those of us at the table who might be Democratic. all right, our small talk guest, finally, is longtime Islander, Laura Wishick. It's a real pleasure having you join us today, Laura. It's been my honor to work with Laura on various Island issues and committees over the years. And currently, Laura has turned her counseling skills and her legal training to helping those among us who face the overwhelming power of such agencies as ICE, INS, and DHS. And we're going to start it out the way we normally do with a broad interrogatory, which is before we get into your experience with the immigration issues specifically, let's start with an overview of your personal origin story. How did you get to Vashon, and what have you been doing since you're here, both professionally and in a private capacity?
Okay. So how I got to Vashon, I married my husband in 1988, and he had grown up on a farm in Mississippi. And we were living in Seattle, and he hated living in a city. So we started looking for a place we could live and commute to our jobs in Seattle. And we didn't want to have to be stuck in freeway traffic. So that narrowed it down. And when we first came to Vashon the very first time, it was like, okay, this is it. This is the place. We were fortunate enough to find land available for sale, and we built a house and been here ever since and love it.
Right.
And then in terms of what I've been doing, since I came here, I tell people sometimes that my hobby, excuse me, I got a cough, that my hobby is public service. So I served on a committee with Craig back in the day about rural government, and on the land trust board and on the park board and on the school board and various, you know, trying to help in various nonprofits. And so that's been a lot of what I've done since I've been on Vashon. I've been an environmental lawyer for the city of Seattle. I was there for 40 years and just retired this year.
Wow.
So now I'm trying to give back in a different way, which is to learn and use immigration law to help people who are in really dire circumstances these days.
Well, that's I always love it when I meet an attorney we get a lot of bad press sometimes, a bad rap. And my experience is that most of the attorneys that I know and I consider friends of mine contribute a tremendous amount to their communities, not to mention the work they do for their clients, oftentimes for free. Not intentionally. No, yes, intentionally.
yeah.
Intentionally. Hey, Bruce, you had a question, I think. You want to follow up there?
Yeah, Laura, you know, just for our listeners, maybe you could give us just a brief overview of the history of immigration, especially how it relates to what's going on in America today. I know that's an incredibly broad question, but just give our listeners some context.
We have almost an hour to go. So.
Sure. So a lot of people say, well, my grandparents came here legally. Why can't people just wait in line and take their turn and come here legally? And what people don't know is that there really was kind of a dividing line in 1924. So my grandparents came in the late 1800s from Eastern Europe, and at that point in time, everybody was assessed as an individual, and they would be allowed in unless they were a criminal, they had certain health conditions, or they were a lunatic.
Mm.
If you weren't one of those three things, you came in. Then in 1924, there was the first Broad Immigration Act passed. It was designed by a congressman from Washington State, Albert Johnson, who believed in eugenics, which is a racist point of view that some people are better than others just from the get-go, and therefore should not be allowed to breed or have rights or whatever. Mm. So in 1924, he got enough support in the Congress and the Senate, And the purpose was to preserve homogeneity in the American population. And what they meant by that was white Protestant people, primarily from Northern and Western Europe. And so what they did was they ended immigration from Asia entirely, which had already been restricted. And they set quotas for each nation of 2% of that population that was already here in 1890. Well, 1890 was before a lot of the immigrants from Italy and from Eastern Europe had come. And so that was how they were able to prevent more of them, or much more of them, from coming. They also set an annual cap on the number of people that could come. That was an 80% reduction in the number of people who could come overall. So that was really a watershed moment. And our immigration laws have changed somewhat since then. But that's the framework. The framework was prevent people from coming here who are not white and Protestant. Mm. I think the next big thing I want to mention was during World War II. During World War II, we needed people to work in agriculture because a lot of the men had gone to war. And so we had the Bracero program, which brought in Mexican men to work in agriculture. 5 million Mexican men were brought in and were allowed to work here. They were here until about 1964, although there were some deportations. You might know the Woody Guthrie song about, you know, the deportees that died in a plane crash. There were several efforts to deport people, but basically they were allowed to be here until 1964. And at that point was the time when we really started to try to close the border with Mexico. Those are two of the big events that I think are worth mentioning in terms of context for where we are today.
Hmm. Great. Thank you.
So to follow up on that, as they said, I'm a partially Reformed Texan. My father actually participated in the Bracero program. He had a cotton farm, and we had Braceros that worked for us. And we talked about that in one of our earlier episodes, so I find that interesting that that would be one of the large things. Also about Texas, I recently was down in Texas visiting my cousin, who is a rancher and actually a county judge, a retired county judge. And so he has a great deal of experience with the whole immigration issue down there. And I asked him, Sam, what do you see as a solution to this issue? I mean, you know, is the fence the way to go, or what do we need to do? And his comment, which I completely agree with, was he said, you know, until we take care of the issues in the countries from which these people are leaving, we're going to have this issue. And so my question to you then, Laura, is what kinds of things are happening in those places that cause these people to want to come here?
Yeah. In order for somebody to want to pick up and leave their home and travel through horrible, horrible, deathly situations to get here, it has to be a dire situation. And the kinds of things that cause people to try to do that are war, usually a civil war within their own country, sometimes an invasion from another country, a natural disaster like the earthquake in Haiti, climate change, which is now driving people because they can no longer survive with the crops that they were used to growing, gangs and cartels. I have a friend who's from Mexico and left a lot of family behind in Mexico. One of her uncles was kidnapped by a cartel, held for ransom. They couldn't pay it. He was killed. So a lot of people are trying to leave, especially if they have children. I have another client whose child was threatened with being basically kidnapped and made a sex slave of a gang. And so she fled. So those are some things that cause people to leave. It also relates to economic issues. NAFTA, which we passed, has caused a loss of jobs in Mexico and other Central American countries. And so people are desperate. If you can't get a job and you can't, you know, do something to earn money, and you don't want to join a gang or a cartel and get your money that way, what are you going to do to feed your children? And then government persecution of people who oppose a government. Those are the main kinds of things that cause people to leave.
You know, and that always brings to mind, what in the world can we do? You know, I mean, what kinds of things? These are some of the things that we've talked about in the past. But I'm wondering, what can we as a people and as a government do? I mean, I know what you're doing as a person is to help some of these people once they get here. But what kinds of things? You know what? This is a general question for everybody. What do you see? What kinds of things do you see that we could do to help these countries? You know, do we fix our tariff, the horrible tariff situation, or do we try and promote jobs? And, you know, what do we do? I mean, it's an open-ended question. I'm not expecting anyone to answer that today, but that for me is a huge open question.
Well, thankfully, there are people who are smarter and more informed than I am who have come up with a bunch of good ideas.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Thanks.
There are ideas.
Just not eliminating AID might have been a good idea.
Yeah,
that's true.
Just so the people, I'm not sure some people appreciate the hardships of actually getting here. The Darien Straits, they're in Central America.
Yeah.
People, women, pregnant women, carrying, you know, their little children on their backs or whatnot, trying to get through that area. I mean,
I can tell you a couple of stories that have been told to me. So a client that I have who came from Central America, South America, and who went through the Darien Strait, which is a section of the Amazon jungle. And it took them, I think it was like 11 days or something like that to get through there. They had to carry water because they couldn't drink water. And they had to go up and down mountainous areas. And she saw another family where the father fell down when he was trying to climb up, broke his leg, and they had to leave him there to die. Other people died. You know, they slept outdoors wherever they could, you know, find a place to sleep. It was a pretty horrific piece, but it wasn't the only piece. I have another client who also was on a boat that went from Colombia to Panama. I think I've got that right. It was a very small wooden boat with a motor on it. Probably could have safely carried 10 people, had about 25 or 30 people in it. They went at night with no lights in order to avoid being stopped. And they went very fast on a very rough ocean. So you can imagine how scary that was. That same person also rode a train part of the way. It's basically the death train. People ride on the roof. He actually rode between two of the train cars. Freezing cold. You got to hang on. You have no way to get on and off. So you've got to, you basically go hungry during that time. I mean, people fall off. Women get raped. It's a really horrendous task. And then once they get to Mexico, they get mistreated terribly. The police want bribes. They'll take their documents. And the police will even put them in prison until they'll pay a bribe. The police, I've know a situation where the police turned somebody over to a cartel. So it's extremely dangerous, not something anybody wants to do.
Yeah, it really points out that this is not an immigration of choice or convenience, if you're willing to go through those kinds of horrific hardships. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Where are we? Amy.
Can I follow up?
Go ahead.
One thing. Truman asked, you know, why do people come illegally? And I just wanted to mention, for most people, there's no legal way to come. So if you're desperate, you come.
Yeah, I think that is the real crux of the question for me, is that, you know, that there is no single legal way in order to do that. The people who say, well, we can accept all these immigrants if they just do it legally. But there is no legal way. So there you go.
So kind of, you know, blending into that, you know, all administrations in
recent history have sort of had their relationship with migration, right? And with deportation, right? It's not unique to the Trump era. Obama, you know, deported tons and tons of folks, right? But there's a different feel to it. And, you know, there's sort of some structural things, right, that are happening with, you know, Trump ending temporary protected status, ending, you know, a lot of the legal pathways, just sort of indiscriminately revoking green cards or visas or, right, ways that people are here legally in the country. All of the ramp up with ICE, right? There's just this sort of very visible structural, you know, in a way it was invisible before, right? It was easy for us to sort of ignore what was happening with deportations. And now it's very visible. In addition to, you know, those things that we've talked about and what we might see, what else is the Trump administration doing structurally? What else are they doing, you know, to limit legal migration that we may not be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, what is now apparent, it took us a little while to realize, is that this administration is trying to deconstruct the legal pathways that remained. So there will be no legal pathways. That's really their goal. And a lot of the people that are now being detained are people who were here because they were following a legal pathway. Mm-hmm. As an example, refugees and people seeking asylum. So refugees are people who are outside the U.S. and who apply through the United Nations. And they are people who've been persecuted based on race, religion, ethnicity, their political opinion, or their membership in a particular social group. In 2025, our country had an annual cap on the number of refugees we would accept that was 125,000. Trump has reduced that to 17,500 and only white South Africans.
Mm. Yeah, I remember that.
People from all over the world have already been vetted by the United Nations, have been waiting their turn to get into this country, and he has closed the door and is only allowing in these white Afrikaners. So that's one example. And for people who think, well, we've already taken our share, I hear that sometimes, it's worthwhile knowing that other countries, including ones that are far less well set than ours, Turkey, Pakistan, and Colombia, have hosted 75% of the world's refugees. So we are not taking our share.
Mm-hmm.
One other example, the one I know the best, is asylum. Asylum was introduced in our country after World War II because of what happened with the Nazis, because we turned away not only Jews, but other people who were fleeing from Nazi Germany on the basis that, well, they didn't fit our immigration system. And so the world recognized after World War II that we needed to have a process for people to seek asylum when their governments were persecuting them. And there was a UN resolution that was passed, and eventually our country also adopted an asylum process. And like refugees, a person seeking asylum has to prove, and it's not always easy, that they were persecuted, that they're likely to be persecuted in the future, and the persecutions by their government or with their government's acquiescence. So it doesn't work for an economic refugee immigrant. It doesn't work for people who are fleeing because a family member assaulted them. It only works if you are being persecuted by your government. What Trump has done is, first of all, he started firing the judges that decide these cases. So 170 judges were fired. Some of them he replaced either with military judges or with people that were recruited on the basis that they were going to enforce the law. And basically, they've been trained and told to only grant asylum infrequently, as little as possible. He also removed people from the appellate level of the immigration courts. And now all the people at that level are his appointees. And the decisions they're coming out with are very anti-immigrant in all kinds of ways. Most recently, his administration enacted a rule that says instead of having a possibility of getting asylum by talking to an officer within the administrative arm of the government, that's now no longer going to be available to you. You have to go to court. Well, the courts, as I said, are stacked. They're stacked to deny asylum. And they're also backlogged. So that means people have to wait. And while they wait, they are not safe.
Right.
People who have a pending asylum application are getting deported. And then, I mean, in a way, it's brilliant. I mean, it's a brilliantly counter-immigration effort on the part of this administration, because they've also hit people in other ways. So now you have to wait a year after you apply for asylum to get a work permit. What are you supposed to do for a year with no work, no money? And they've cut funds to all of the agencies that used to help, right? What are you supposed to do? And if you to get a work permit, you have to pay a $520 fee, which obviously somebody who just arrived here may not have. So they keep building on one thing after another. It's really like watching the deconstruction of an edifice. You know, they took down the chimney, and then they took down the windows, and then they took down the stairs. And then, I mean, you're just watching the whole thing get pulled into pieces.
Hmm. You know, go ahead, Bruce.
Can I ask a question? Because I get this from a lot of people, too, just in terms of your metaphor of deconstructing this whole sort of process that we had developed. Imperfect as it was, it still was a process. What's it going to take to rebuild that? Yeah. And can it be done? Yeah. And will it, is it a 5-year, a 10-year, or is it a never?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but I think that it will take years. I think it would take moving the money that's being used for, you know, detaining and deporting people into the system in order to process their applications. And, you know, that could be done by another administration. They could move that money with Congress's approval. So I think it would be a big job.
You know, the one thing that bugs me the most about all of this, truly, is when you have someone who is running a company, owns a company, they're here either on a green card or whatever, they've started a business, and they have employees, and they're paying their taxes, they're good citizens of our country, but they're not. And they're nailing these people and deporting them. How in the heck can we fight something like that? Or is that something you're working with? Or how do we deal with that? I don't know if that's a question you can answer.
Vote.
Well, true.
I mean, I agree with that. You got to vote, and we've got to get different people running the country.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Kevin.
So, Laura, always good to be with you again on this really important discussion, this really important topic. You know, you mentioned a lot of the administration's opposition to immigration. There must be plenty of opportunities that you have to support the immigrant community. You mentioned earlier a person that you supported who's now out of the detention center. Can you share other stories of people you've helped since you started working with immigrants?
Sure. People that I've worked with on asylum cases primarily, although on Vashon, I've also started helping to kind of give an initial consult to people on Vashon who are sort of wondering, what is my option? You know, how can I manage this? And they often, I just want to mention how that works, that very often they get to me or to Bob Gibbs, who's a retired immigration attorney for, you know, 40 plus years working as an immigration attorney. They get to us through Vashon Youth and Family Services. So somebody goes to VYFS and says, you know, I need to talk to somebody about my immigration. And then they meet with Patricia, who works there, and then she will refer them to us. So, what we've been able to do, and I have to say Bob has done 99% of it, but what we've been able to do is to say to people, okay, looks like maybe you have an asylum claim. You need to file an asylum application. You need to talk to an attorney. And unfortunately, most of the organizations that provide attorneys for free are overwhelmed. But that's the first place people can start. They can try. They can go to the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. They can go to Catholic Charities. They can go to Lutheran Services. They can try those to get a free attorney. But assuming that they can't get one, There's now an organization that we're building to help provide funds so that people can pay for an attorney. But that's only if they have a viable pathway. If they don't have a viable pathway, the other things they can do are prepare to be deported so that they're ready for that. That might mean setting up a guardianship for their children if their children are citizens and they want their children to stay here with a family member or a friend. It might mean other things that they can do to prepare for that. And of course, they could choose to leave voluntarily, but we don't, you know, most people don't want to do that, leave a business, as Truman said. They may have a established business here. Did I answer your question, Kevin? I kind of lost it.
Still
think,
muted.
Yeah, generally, you know, the kind of things that you've done to support people, and I assume that there's, you know, individuals behind all those stories.
Oh, yes.
Folks who've come to your help, and you've been able to provide those kind of services. So thanks for that.
Yeah, and in terms of some stories by people, I mean, I had one client who came from the Republic of Georgia, which is a former Soviet state, and that government has unfortunately changed from leaning democratic to becoming fascist and oppressive. And he had been speaking out against some of what the government was doing, and he was kidnapped and beaten and threatened with death, and eventually fled and ended up in detention. And in his case, we were fortunate. We got him asylum. That was early in the Trump administration. And my client who's now here is from Afghanistan. And, you know, the people in Afghanistan are in horrible straits. And some of them are people who helped our military, either as interpreters or even as judges who convicted Taliban. And they've been waiting. Some of them have been waiting for years to come to this country. They've been vetted, and they're not allowed under the Trump administration to come here. So there's a lot of different types of stories.
So this, I think, is a perfect segue. How can we, as citizens of Vashon, assist you or assist in this process? Is there anything that we can do that will help do that?
Yes. I'm glad to say yes. There are a variety of things in addition to voting. I would say that even something as simple as putting a yard sign, if you have a property that abuts the road, we have created some yard signs that say, they have an image of Vashon and they say, "We support immigrants." It's important to let people know that, to let the immigrants on the island know that, and to let the other folks on the island know that there is support here for immigrants. Telling people about their opportunity to go to VYFS and get some help through Vashon Youth and Family Services. Telling people that Indivisible Vashon is trying to help immigrants in a variety of ways. And I'm going to let Kevin talk more about that if he wishes. There's a variety of different types of ways people can help through Indivisible. And then there are things as simple as being willing to, you know, if you know an immigrant, being willing to help them with getting, if they're afraid, getting them groceries or whatever it is that they need to do. And some people say, well, ICE is never going to come here. We're not going to have a surge on Vashon. You know, I hear that from people. Okay, but they're still getting detained. And they're getting detained when they go for their regularly scheduled check-in with ICE. Or another man from Vashon got detained because he bought a car and registered it. And 3 days later, he was stopped in Seattle. And I have to believe that ICE was monitoring license plates and putting that together with their database and figuring out that this was a person they wanted to detain. So people are still getting detained and they still will need help.
You know, the whole business of people with whistles and all of those things, you know, we can do that here on the island.
It's being done.
If you see somebody coming onto the island that looks like there's something going on, you know, that they look like they might be ICE or whatever, get a hold of some people and let them know, hey, these people are here, right?
Well, and we don't like to cause rumors that are not sure we're correct, because ICE uses, you know, black SUVs, and people think every time they see a black SUV, yeah, it's got to be ICE.
I have seen that on social media.
Yeah, we don't want people to panic unnecessarily. Right. So there is a whole vetting system, and actually there's a phone number through Indivisible. Maybe Kevin can talk about that.
Let's Kevin, tell us what's up with Indivisible Vashon in this issue.
Thank you for that. We've been supporting this community for a decade. There have been a lot of things we have learned, and it's very important to understand the value of those lessons, because harm can be done, even with good intentions. But first of all, to hear about what we're doing, attend the activist summer camp meeting, Wednesday, August 12th. We're at 7 p.m. at the Vashon United Methodist Church. You'll hear from many folks from Indivisible Vashon, particularly the immigrant refugee rights group. And there's going to be s'mores pops. There's going to be a virtual campfire. So stop on by. But of the many, many things that you can do, Truman, you mentioned whistles. We have distributed whistle kits at our meetings for months, and also to island businesses. Attend a Know Your Rights training. This is supporting not only you if you're caught up in a situation where you see somebody trying to detain a person, trying to pull somebody out of their car. You should know your rights and what you can and cannot do. We also have a rapid response team. If we were to see some of those things happening on Vashon, there is a network. There is a phone number. People can basically provide information. There's training on what constitutes information that is helpful and information that's essential. We also accompany folks to those hearings that Laura mentioned, so you can join the accompaniment team. You can also donate. There's a fund on Vashon. I think, Laura, you mentioned it. I think it's the Vashon Refugee Immigrant Support Team. And basically, for legal cases, for people who live and work on the island. We also have vigils about ICE and raising awareness, right, about what is happening. This is what we're doing here on the show. We also can be a pen pal to those who are detained in the Northwest Detention Center, donating to Vashon Youth and Family Services because, of course, of this work that Laura mentioned that they're supporting. Wear that ICE whistle, carry it in your car, carry it in your pocket. And also the phone numbers for some of the agencies like the Washington Immigrant Support Network and the reporting number for something that might happen here on Vashon, put those numbers in your phone. There's also a reading buddy program at Chautauqua for some of the immigrant families who are here. So there's so many things to do. So show up at that meeting and you'll hear more about it, and sign up to do some of those things.
All right. Laura, did you have a couple of final remarks?
I just had one final pitch, which is that I'm able to do what I'm doing with immigration law because I'm doing it with the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project. And they mentor me. They have a person there who helps me find resources, helps me learn the law. They're fabulous. And I have to say, any attorney, retired, still working, I don't care what kind of law you practice, I was an environmental lawyer, you can help. And so I would recommend contacting NIRP, the Northwest Immigrant Rights Project, to see what you can do.
Laura, it has been enlightening and a pleasure to a certain degree. Subject matter, of course, is not the most pleasant, but it's one that is very, very important, and we appreciate the information and the volunteer work that you do. It's great. Next week, Truman.
Before I get there, Laura, thank you very, very much for everything that you've been doing. I mean, I've known you for years at Park District and all of the efforts that you've put in. I really, really appreciate your altruistic vent. Anyway, next week, hey, we have Esther Lucero, who's the CEO of Seattle Indian Health Board. And they're the folks who are, of course, running the new Thunderbird Treatment Center here on the island. She's going to be with us. I'm not sure if it's going to be via Zoom or in person or maybe even Microsoft Teams, I'm sorry to say. But anyway, she'll be with us. And I think it should be a pretty interesting show.
I'm sure it will be.
Thanks.
All right. Well, for Bruce, Amy, Truman, Kevin, Laura Wiship, and myself, Craig, we thank you for listening. And please tune in next Tuesday for the Brown Briefly Show.